Hey everyone, welcome to the Entrepreneur Bootcamp podcast, where we empower and inspire small business owners and solopreneurs to reach new heights. Today, we're thrilled to have Cheyenne, the owner of Travel with Shy, as our guest. Cheyenne specializes in vacation and travel planning for all-inclusive resorts, cruises, Disney, Universal, and hotel stays. Since entering the travel industry in 2021 and launching her agency in 2024, she's been making travel dreams a reality for her clients. Get ready for some valuable insights and tips on marketing, client conversion, and personalized travel planning.
Did you know that over a million new businesses launch each year, yet nearly 40% fail in their first year and 80% within five? I'm Derek Schmidt, and I don't want you to become another statistic. That's why I started the Entrepreneur Bootcamp podcast. I'm going to use real-world experience and straightforward advice to help you navigate through the rough waters of entrepreneurship. Whether you're drafting your first business plan or aiming for new heights, this is your toolkit for however you define success. Let's dive in.
Cheyenne, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Derek. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. So to get started, can you share a little bit about your story and how you got started in the travel industry and what inspired you to become an agency owner?
Yeah, absolutely. So way back in the day, I think this probably started 2017-ish. I actually did the Disney College program down in Orlando.
Oh, wow.
I've done it twice, but that was the first time that I did it. My junior year of college, I took the spring semester off from in-person classes, and I took online classes while I was in Florida. I came back for my senior year, and when I graduated, I was like, yeah, real adult world doesn't sound too great. So I went back to Disney for a second college program. And during that time, my mom and I started participating in Run Disney races. So we did the Disney Princess Half Marathon weekend for like 4 years straight. And one year we did not get our bibs in time. Yeah. So at the time, Disney was still selling bibs to travel agencies. So I just Googled travel agencies with Run Disney bibs and found who was my travel agent for about 3 years. And then about 3 years passed, we've been doing Run Disney races, and we were working with our own travel agent, and then her agency started hiring. So I reached out to her, and I was like, would you be okay if I applied to be your coworker, essentially, and like be our own agent? She was like, no, absolutely not. I'll even put a good word in for you. So this was 2021-ish. So I think it was like August 8th that I officially like started. But that's how I got into the travel agency business, but I've been traveling since I was a kid. My personal travel I have 20 states and 16 countries so far.
Wow.
So I've just really enjoyed getting out there and seeing more than what North Carolina and the East Coast has to offer. But that is the start of it. Fast forward to back 2024, February of this year, we found out that my agency was being sold. The agency owner was ready to retire and move on, and I wasn't really wanting to do the sub-agent thing anymore. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to go independent. We're just going to full send this thing and go for it. So March 14th was whenever I got my official articles of incorporation and became Travel with Shy. So it's been a journey so far. We've only been doing it for 3 months. Q1, Q2 has been a little rocky, but I feel like that's how everybody works with their first, you know, even though we've been in it for 3.5 years at this point, you know, that first step again is still really difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. My oldest son is, he had mentioned that he was interested in doing the Disney internship program. I thought that was a really cool idea. I've always wanted to travel more than what I'm able to do now.
Yeah.
So you've got quite the list under your belt as far as the places you've gone, and that's really exciting. What did COVID do for the travel industry when you were working with the previous agency?
So thankfully, I came in right after the major peak of COVID. So fall 21, obviously, we really didn't see a heavy decline in COVID until about 22, 23. But leading up to that, I know my personal travel was impacted severely. The half marathon weekend that my mom and I did was actually when we did our first half marathon, and that was the weekend of February 20th, mm-hmm. 2020, I think. So right before the official closures started coming out. And then the cabin fever I got was outrageous. I was working back in Charlotte at the time, and my employer was like, hey, everybody's got to leave. Go, like, you don't have to go home or wherever your hometowns are, but we're not doing the office thing for about 3 months. So I actually came back to the Raleigh area before I'd moved to Brunswick County and hung out with my parents for 3 months and just didn't leave the house. And then they called us all back. I have not had any, knock on wood, I have not had any clients directly impacted by any COVID repercussions. Mm-hmm. But I have clients, friends or adjacent, who have had trips canceled at the last minute, or they got to a cruise port and they were still doing COVID tests and they tested positive even though they didn't have any symptoms, so they had to go home. That was the biggest hurdle, I think, that I saw in the travel industry across the board. The cruise lines did a lot of good work to try to mitigate what they could. So you had a test 2 weeks before mm-hmm. your departure, and then whenever you got to the port for check-in. So you could either test the day before if you got in early and then you just show the negative test, or you would test at the port and do one of the rapids. A lot of the theme parks in both Central Florida and California, because those are like, you know, Disney, Universal, the main bread and butter, mm-hmm. they did test. You just had to test negative 72 hours before you arrived.
Toga.
So we actually experienced that in 2021 on one of my personal trips. We left a wedding in Charlotte on a Thursday, I think. So we had a wedding on Thursday or Friday. We drove through the night to Orlando and then woke up, or, well, I don't know if we really woke up. We didn't go to sleep, but we ended up at one of the Orlando Health pop-up testing sites mm-hmm. that they were having. We got our tests, and then we went and we parked in the corner and we just sat and waited for the 15 or 20 minutes for it to pop up negative. We then went to Universal for the day, left Universal, stayed at Disney for the night, and then went and got on our cruise the next day. But the way that we were able to stack everything, that one test that we got the day after the wedding and the day we got to Universal worked for both Universal and the cruise. And thankfully, we came back off the ship and nobody got sick. We were mask heavy for a lot of travel in like travel destinations up until, I want to say, mid to late 2022. Since they're all private enterprises, they could kind of fluctuate with, okay, the feds say that we can be a little lax, but we're going to say, no, you have to wear your mask, or numbers are down, you don't have to wear it right now, but keep one on you. Disney experienced that a lot, where they would, like, if it started to peak, they would put the mask mandate back on. If it started to go down, they'd be like more lax with it, and it's only indoors or things like that. So there was a lot that went into it. I'm glad that we are, for the most part,
yeah, crazy times. The one big family trip that sticks out in my mind that we did was Universal, and this was before COVID, but we drove to Orlando. So my two oldest kids kind of flew on a plane, and we met my parents there, and my wife and I and my youngest daughter drove to Orlando. We get there, and then almost instantly everybody gets sick with the flu. And this was before COVID, but uh-huh. it was terrible because it was like half of us were down with the flu back at the hotel room, and the other half, you know, we had one day of like going to enjoy Universal, and then we come back to the room and that half gets sick and the other half's still sick, and we had to drive all the way back, which was like a 13-hour drive.
Yeah,
it was pretty tough. But I'm curious what... So I know you worked at an agency prior to starting your own. What would you do differently in Q1 and Q2, knowing what you know now?
I would have pushed through being so scared, mm-hmm. honestly, because I just kept saying, oh, like, it's growing pains, you know, get your ducks in a row. My ducks will never be in a row. That's just who I am as a person. Yeah. My ducks will never be in the row. They'll all be on the table, but I'll just pull from what I need to do. But I was so scared. I was so nervous because it was like, you know, I've been doing this for 3 years. I've been running, I ran socials and the website for my previous agency. My day job, I ran socials and the website. And I'm like, how, you know, I am my own worst client when it comes to travel, when it comes to marketing myself and my business. And I was just like, oh, well, people know me.
Yeah.
If they think of me, they'll go look. And relying on that, I know better. But it's, you know, we had talked briefly about the imposter syndrome mm-hmm. coming through. And I was like, am I making a mistake? Should I have gone with the other agency? So working through that, I'm in a much better space with everything now. And I don't know what the kick in the shins was to really get it going, but that would be the biggest thing. I was like, just like, you know, push through and you're persevering, but do it a little stronger.
Yeah.
So
get out of your own way. I think there's a lot of value in that. I could see from when I first started and even to date, as you mentioned, we were talking about imposter syndrome. I still feel like, and this is 13 years in the making as of this recording, that I still have imposter syndrome. One thing I can credit to myself that I think I've been really good about doing is just kind of taking risks, for better or for worse. And maybe that has to tie into some other parts of my life, but I'm not afraid to take risks and put myself out there. But what's important and why I'm even going down this road is that now I'm at a position where I'm training my team more on sales. And part of that training is to like go for that ask, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not cheap with what we do. So you have to be comfortable asking for that amount of money or the money.
Absolutely.
And so part of that is just kind of owning your power and stepping into it and just go for the ask. And if it's a no, if it's rejection, then so be it. You know, there's plenty, yeah. But it's taking that step. And that sometimes is the hardest step there.
Oh yeah. All the time. One of the most valuable things I learned from my previous agency owner, and we are still great friends to this day, is to never, ever quote anything with my wallet. Because mm-hmm. my wallet is very different than some of my clients' wallet. Right. And kind of similar to, you know, I can't change the price of travel. So the price is what the price is. But being strong and being confident and saying, okay, here's what it is.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
Yep.
And going from there. So absolutely yeah. get that.
Have you found that to be more successful for you, to work better?
Definitely. I'm trying to be very respectful of my clients' budget. So if they give me a $5,000 budget, I'm not going to push that too much. I will go up to whatever the top of the budget is, because sometimes that might be the top of their budget, but based off of what the information they've given me, we might have to go to the top of the budget. Or if we're looking at like the middle part of the budget, but I know that the perks or the different amenities or whatever they get with it just aren't there, mm-hmm. then I'll offer the higher one and say, hey, I know that this is close, or this might be a little over, you know, maybe yeah. a couple $100 over, and say like, this is why I'm offering this, because you are a family of four and you really enjoy complimentary breakfast in bed, and you would get this at this tier completely included, but then you're paying an extra $25 or $100 a day to do it at this tier. So
yeah,
definitely looking and balancing those different levels and figuring out which one is going to work best for what they're looking for.
Yeah. Do you provide a good, better, and best option?
Yeah, typically. Okay. And that best option, if it's not at the very like top of their budget, mm-hmm. it might be a little over. But I typically stay around 3 to 4, because after 3, folks should get overwhelmed with the options, because you're looking through pages and pages at that point of information on each one. And, you know, like, this fits your bill, or this fits what you've asked for, but this is going to provide you the best experience.
Yeah.
You know, so those once in a lifetime, or we travel once every 3 to 5 years, and it's a big multi-generational thing, and we want to go to Alaska, yeah. but we want interior rooms. You don't.
Yeah.
You don't. And honestly, a 7-day cruise to Alaska, an interior room and a balcony room, those are very, like, the prices aren't that different whenever you start breaking down what you get in each category.
Yeah.
So, but education is a huge part of that too, because sometimes they see, well, so-and-so is saying that it's this much. Why is yours this much? I'm like, well, did it include taxes, fees, and port expenses? Did it include transfers? All of those different things added into it.
Yeah. I call that sometimes decision paralysis, when you give too many options or too much information, and then people just kind of shut down, and it gets hard for them to receive anything else you're telling them. Yeah. What were some of the biggest challenges you faced when transitioning from working in the travel industry to owning your own agency?
I am my own employee. So I do all of it. I do the phone calls and the text messages and the emails and the website and the socials and the this and the that. All of the print marketing, in addition to digital, is more where I'm at. I'm 28. So like I grew up with a cell phone in my hand basically, and just got my master's from UNCW in marketing in 2023. But you know, people still love print when it comes to travel. They love print, and it's because you can physically hold it and you can see the destination, and you can, I don't know, there's just something different about seeing it on your phone screen. But all of that is Cheyenne. So balancing my day job, which is sometimes 45 to 50 hours a week, and my travel job, which is also close to 30 or 40 hours a week, sometimes that balance has been kind of difficult to navigate. It used to be where I could just pop online for an hour or two in the evenings, or dedicate, you know, my Saturday morning to getting it done, and then boom, all done. And we're at the point now where it's a 7 day a week job, which a good problem to have, but working on figuring out what my balance is and getting back to having a day or two where I'm not doing any work. Whether that ends up being Saturday or Sunday or Sunday and Monday, like just getting a better balance going on. That's really been something that I've been struggling with more. I love all of the different tools that I'm experimenting with for post scheduling and sending, like scheduling my emails to go out and everything. So that is nice. I have a brand new CRM that I am obsessed with. It makes sending out itineraries and proposals so much easier. But there's still a lot on that that I have to learn too. Yeah. So in addition to curating and booking, we're also learning all these, we're learning all these new tools too. So that balance is just interesting to handle.
There have been many days where it seemed like the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep, I just work. And it didn't feel like work so much because I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. There was a point where my wife kind of mentioned it to me, not directly, it was kind of indirectly, but just that I work a lot. And I was like, oh man, I do. And so that had, you know, I had to come to terms with the work-life balance thing. And it's important to have that because, you know, you can only go so long before you burn out in that scenario. What specific social media platforms have you found to be the most effective for your business and why?
As much as I would love to say Instagram is just, you know, that's it. It's not. Facebook is better for me. Which for better or for worse, Facebook is a beast of its own. Meta in general, so both the platforms. But I typically will post Instagram first because I will get more immediate engagement there, but my Facebook post lasts longer, where folks are engaging for 3 to 4 days out, sometimes up to a week. I get more folks sharing my posts in general on Facebook than on Instagram. Like, folks won't share their story for that, but they'll share the post on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, we're getting it out there. I've been looking at Pinterest a little bit. I've had a Pinterest for like 13 years, but I haven't really looked at it from the marketing perspective. Mm-hmm. But everything, like a lot of current trends that I'm seeing, I was like, are you leveraging Pinterest? I'm like, no, I'm not. And I stay far away from X. So I'm like, yeah, we're just not gonna, that we're just gonna ignore that one for now. But yeah, Facebook and Twitter are really the big ones. I've looked at Reddit some, but Reddit is just more of a search engine platform. I don't really know if that's the way to say it. I've done the TikTok thing a couple of times, but TikTok is exhausting.
It is.
And again, coming from one of the younger millennials, TikTok is just exhausting. I don't know why it's different to make a TikTok video versus an Instagram reel, but it is. And I've tried to do the create it in CapCut and then upload it to the correct platform, and it either they'll both do terrible or one will do significantly better than the other. And I'm like, oh, that's just that's gross. I hate that. So
it seems like there's so many social media platforms too. It's hard to know which ones. I'm surprised to hear that Instagram, because I would imagine with the travel industry, like visual things would do really well, you know?
It And it does if I can catch it at the right place. So if I'm in destination, my Instagram is popping off. Like, the algorithm loves me and loves what I'm sending out. I could take a picture of a blank wall and it would do numbers. When I'm home, generally anywhere in North Carolina, because we did a staycation up the road at Blockade Runner for my birthday this past year, and I did a lot of content there. And it did okay. It did better than my normal stuff. But it's like, it knew, because obviously my location services are on, tagging everything. And it just knew that I was here. But if I jet down to Florida, or I go over to Anaheim, or a cruise, go to the Caribbean or something, we're doing numbers. And it's a little frustrating, because I can't travel as much, because I do have a day job. As much as I want this to be my like primary income and what I'm doing, you know, I only have so much allotted PTO to do it. So in theory, I would like to be in destination once a quarter, and doing stuff like that, primarily for the content. But it's strange. And Instagram is really saturated in the summertime, specifically with travel content, because everybody's traveling, but especially a lot of the influencers and the content creators are getting out. And that's when a lot of the award shows are, or when there's a lot of familiarization trips going on, or they have like one low week, like the supplier has one low weekend or something. So they're like, oh, like, let's get some influencer marketing out here and get that taken care of. So people are seeing it across their screens a lot. And sometimes I think it's hard to differentiate between, is my local travel advisor posting this, or is one of my favorite influencers posting it? Because a lot of people sometimes won't pay attention to who did it.
Yeah.
And they're just, and I do it too. Like, sometimes I'll go and I'll scroll and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize so-and-so posted this. So
I wonder, you might be onto something there, because I always think of things like from a technical standpoint. So I wonder if like the algorithm does prioritize where your location's at when you're posting and stuff. And if that is true, I wonder if there'd be any value in using a VPN.
I haven't thought about that.
I wonder, you should try that. Yeah. Just try a VPN, post it so that it thinks you're from another location and see if you get any higher engagement or anything from a post that you technically took from
Right. Your
area.
Because the only times so this is how you know I'm a very small content creator. My idea of going viral is like 10,000 views.
Yeah.
And I've only gone viral like two or three or four times, if that, and it was split between Instagram and TikTok. All of the times I was either in Anaheim, California or Orlando, Florida. Every single time. And those are still some of the best videos, my favorite videos, because I'm like, oh, well, you know, let me go back and look at that and kick it back into the algorithm. But all the times that I've had over 10K views have been when I'm in California or Florida.
Interesting.
So I'm definitely going to have to look into that, because I hadn't considered it. I'm not much of a techie at all. So like, I wouldn't have thought to do that.
Yeah. You'll have to let me know. If so, we might be onto something. Can you tell us more about your experience with the local markets and how they've impacted your business?
Yes. So I moved to Brunswick County 2 years ago. I'm originally from the Johnston County, right outside of Raleigh area in North Carolina. And so there's a lot of growth down there, because Johnston County and Brunswick County are neck and neck with, growth in general. But there's not really much hospitality or travel industry in that area. So moving out here, I didn't really have any local networks back in my hometown to really tap into, mostly because I knew I was going to leave. So I was like, I don't really want to super like in-depthly build these relationships and curate them now if I'm about to, you know, move 2 hours east. But whenever I moved here, I was very nonchalant about getting myself out there and saying, oh, like, I am your local travel advisor, come book your trip with me. Last year, so 2023, I decided I was going to join my local chamber of commerce. And from there, that gave me the confidence to start reaching out and commenting on posts in random local groups saying, hey, we're looking for guests on our podcast. I'm like, you know what? That's terrifying, but it sounds really interesting. And I want to get out there and do it. So I've just recently started really tapping into that, because last fall, like, it's only been maybe like 6 or 8 months that I've really taken advantage of all of the awesome networking opportunities that we have in the Cape Fear region. Mm-hmm. I try to make sure that I am building genuine relationships with a lot of other small business owners too, because small business owner, like, we know that we can't get out there and do each other's thing as much as possible. Like, travel's expensive. We'll never deny that. But we can talk to each other's clients. And so that's really what we, like, my little circle, kind of what we've been doing is like, well, I don't have anything to, like, trade or offer you. Anything that you do with me, we have to pay for it. But let's talk to our mutual client who might be wanting to go to Jamaica or go to an all-inclusive, wants to go to Sandals or go on a cruise to Alaska, you know? So really still very much in the infancy of getting into the Cape Fear area and, like, those other networks. But the very small things that I've done so far have started working really well. So I think we're definitely tapping into the snowball effect.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I love it. Getting more into, I've started talking more with Wilma. I was nominated for a Wilma Woman to Wash Award this year. So that also, one, I wasn't expecting it. But also I was able to meet 40 other super influential women in the area and just, like, talk to them about what they've done in their lives. And I'm like, I want to be like you when I grow up. Let's go get lunch. And just having those genuine, honest conversations, and eventually it'll lead to something, but not coming out the gate and being like, hi, I'm Cheyenne, come buy some travel for me.
Yeah. There's a saying that sticks to me. It's all about your network and not your net worth.
Mm-hmm.
And being friendly area. And I'm not sure, I always joke around, but I'm a small town girl from a small town world. Like, I haven't lived anywhere else. But I imagine it's probably similar in other areas, but our area specifically, I know that your local network is huge. And something you said kind of applies to what I think I did subconsciously or without even knowing it when I first started. And that was immediately join, like, a networking group.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, had a huge impact on my business because it forced me into, like, public speaking and getting comfortable with speaking in front of strangers, networking, meeting new people. And that network, not your net worth, is extremely valuable, I think, in our area because it's very who you know.
Absolutely.
Me.
And it also, like, getting into those networking areas and environments, it's something, I'm a yapper. I will talk all day long, but I will not talk about myself. And so kind of being putting myself in the position where I have to tell people about myself and I have to tell them about my business and what I do has been a bit of a breath of fresh air, for sure, because it's pushing me out of my comfort zone, but then eventually that becomes the comfort zone. So I'm more liable to, if I overhear somebody talking about something at a social event, I'm like, oh, well, you know, let's talk about that. I might have some good input or insight for what we can do or good options for you.
So. Yeah. You mentioned struggling in converting interest into bookings. What steps are you currently taking to address this challenge?
I hate a follow-up email. I do. Like, because I don't like it when people do it to me and they're like, if somebody's like, oh, like, hey, we've talked to you, but then I get like four in a row.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I'm working on getting outside of that and sending the, hey, are you still interested in this? If not, I'll just go ahead and archive this. And when you're ready, come back to me. But I never want to come across as like a pushy saleswoman because I'm not good at sales. I'm not. So, oh, look what you're doing, Cheyenne, going into sales. Because I've always thought, oh, well, like if I'm good enough at my job or the location, the destination is good enough, it'll sell itself. And mm-hmm. I know that's not true. So it's just working through that and getting to do that because I'm not closing the loop. And so it's like we get to inquiry, we're right before deposit. And then we stop talking and it's like, okay, well, something might have come up, you know, something that's little, or they accidentally opened the email and didn't follow up. So I need to be responsible for doing that. And that has been one of my biggest challenges is is sending that. But I've seen whenever I do take that step and take a deep breath and send the follow-up email, that usually it's just like, oh my gosh, we completely forgot. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, blocking my own blessings by doing that. And it's like, okay, you realize that and I'll put it into practice.
So you think just following, be more strategic on the follow-ups would help?
I think so. I think that would help with some of it. Okay. One of the other things that I run into is, so I do a weekly vacation view post and it's a destination of my choice and I'll go and I'll price out like a safe vacation that would fit for either two adults or two adults and three kids or two adults and four kids, whatever. And it's completely flexible. Like we can adjust it to whatever needs to be done, but it works really well because that is bringing people to me like, I didn't know you did that. And that was really fun. Let's do that. On the flip side of that, I've seen where I'll have some clients ask me for a quote and then take the information I gave them and book it themselves. And so trying to figure out, unfortunately, that's across the travel industry. Folks will sometimes do that. And that's an education component, is letting people know, like, I don't charge travel fees as of this recording. I'm paid completely by my suppliers. So I won't get paid unless somebody books. And a lot of it, because I've had conversations with some clients. I'm like, hey, like, why did you do that? Like, did you not like what I gave you? Because I need the feedback to move forward. They're like, oh, well, we thought that as long as you did it, you gave us the information, you were good. It's like, not quite. So there's an education component there too. So it's me needing to send a follow-up email and also just making sure I'm educating my clients and those who are in my area and in my network that, hey, if you're interested in doing this, that was fantastic and I'm super excited to help you, but let's make sure that we get all the way through the process.
Yeah, I wonder if that's, well, first off, let me start by saying that I think it's great that you're doing the mock vacations because that's probably something that I feel like if people were dropping off, that would be why. It's like they're interested and then they get to price and they're like, oh, this is way more expensive than I thought. Yeah. So like just having that information readily available or a mock scenario of that information, mm-hmm. I think is huge for qualifying the people that will be reaching out. But then to your point, the education, I think especially if they know at the very beginning, like they're not paying you, yeah. Right? So it's like, why wouldn't they want to do it? It's like, let you book this with your experience. They're not paying you. You're getting paid by the supplier. It's not like it's costing them any more. Is it cheaper if they book it themselves with the information you provide?
Typically, it's either the same or I can sometimes get a lower base rate.
Okay.
So even if somebody, for example, let's use Carnival Cruises for an example. If you go on a Carnival Cruise, you get a VIFP number, which is basically like their frequent flyer. Frequent cruiser number. With that number, you are tied to, or that number is tied to different promotions that anybody who hasn't cruised with Carnival before won't be eligible for. But as long as I have, if you give me your VIFP number, I can put that into the search and any of your special promotions, casino rates, extra onboard credit, promotions, things like that. I can see that and make sure that we book you into a category that includes those offerings that you're getting in your email specifically. So the short answer is not really, but it can look like that. So I actually just ran into that with someone, which is why I use Carnival as the example, specifically with Carnival, because they are like gold or diamond level with Carnival and they want to make sure that they're getting all of the perks that are associated with that. And absolutely any type of loyalty affiliation, we can add that into whatever we're booking into.
Okay. So looking at this through the lens of like value proposition, features, the benefits. So while working with a travel agent, I don't have to pay you directly. So it's not like any additional amount of money. The supplier pays you. I have peace of mind knowing that you are finding all the right promotions, the best packages, the cheapest price possible. And if anything were to go wrong during this trip, like, are you available? Is there ongoing support?
100%. So I'm going to do another tangent because I have to tell this story. It just happened. Yeah. So I have a cruising client, and there are two balcony staterooms going to Alaska literally a month from today. Well, as of this recording. And they're going to Alaska in August of 2024. And there was an accounting error on the cruise line's end. We did nothing wrong. There was, my clients paid everything in full on time. I processed everything properly, and I screenshot everything. Mm-hmm. Thank God. But there's an accounting error on their end. So what ended up happening was this cruise line went in, manually canceled my client's cruise package. It canceled their stateroom that we had picked. So they had selected their staterooms. They were not guarantees, which is you just get assigned something at check-in. Canceled their stateroom, their flights from Philadelphia to Seattle, and all of their excursions in Alaska. So we did not receive an email, a letter, a phone call, anything that happened until my client received an excursion notice that said, hey, like, we've refunded your excursion. Sorry we missed you. She was like, what's going on? Cheyenne, can you look into this? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Next day, because this was on like a weekend, so I couldn't call the cruise line. Their lines were closed for customer service. But the next day I get another like a screenshot that's like, hey, we can't even see our cruise in our app. And I'm like, that's really weird. So I called them and I called the cruise line whenever I could the next day. And they were like, yeah, it got canceled for non-payment. And I was like, hold up. No, it didn't. I was like, I have all of the screenshots. I have the $0 balance. What are you talking about? It took 3 weeks of daily phone calls and emails to the cruise line and to my contacts. And I ended up getting all the way up to the corporate group, because cruise lines have different groups, like all of the different things. I ended up getting all the way up to the corporate level. I finally got somebody to take me seriously and take my client's ticket seriously. And they went in there and went through. She said she had 7 Excel sheets of where all of these different changes had been happening, all of the times I had called, and all of the notes from their end of the phone calls. And I was like, oh, I bet those are fun to read. But all of that to say, we got it taken care of. We got my clients back in their selected stateroom, back on their selected flights, which didn't exist anymore. And I was like, oh, no, they exist. I can see it. Anyway, back in their original stateroom, back on their original flights, back on their excursions with extra onboard credit. And if they were by themselves, they would have gotten turned away at the front door. Would have been no way to forward them to escalate that any further, because I escalated it, I think, like, honestly, like 3 or 4 levels before somebody finally was like, this girl is not going to stop. Something is wrong. So yeah, I am there for you. I am there for my clients to make sure that they have the absolute best time possible. I don't care if they're going down the road to stay at one of the local hotels or hotel chains, or if they're going across the world. Like, my clients mean a lot to me. So making sure that they are fully taken care of is my top priority.
I admire that. Persistence can take you a long way, especially in customer support, stuff like that. And, you know, I think, so tying this back in, like, features, benefits, value proposition, I think everything you've told me in the last few minutes, like consolidating that down to some bullet points and then coming up with a few sentences, that really becomes the opener to the introduction to Travel with Shy, right? Mm-hmm. Because me, as a business or a busy professional, adult, kids, et cetera, like, how much time would that have taken somebody like me? And those mistakes, Carnival, like, it happened to my dad and he had to go through that same process. So you think about the time investment that it takes, and do I have that much time? Do I have the desire to chase that? Like, I'd much rather just have somebody more or less to hold accountable, mm-hmm, for like the whole experience. And if anything goes wrong, like, I'd much rather pay that to happen, you know, then me have to worry about, oh, I didn't think about this and incorporate that in my travel plans.
Oh yeah. It took me 3 weeks. I would hate to have seen how long it would take somebody who booked by themselves.
Yeah.
Cause that was tough.
I imagine so. What advice would you give to other entrepreneurs who are facing similar issues with conversion rates based on your experience?
Be persistent. Don't be icky, but be persistent. Because that is, like I mentioned, that's one of the things that I kind of struggle with is, oh, they stopped responding to me. They hate me. No, they don't. They probably just forgot.
That is really good advice. I don't think anybody has ever shared yet on the show. And I think that's something, drawing again from my own experience, something that did help me in the very beginning and still to this day, like, I will follow up with you to the point of you telling me, like, no, like, I need to know, I need closure. I won't be obnoxious about it. And I don't consider myself a salesperson at all either. And I think that's actually what makes the best salespeople, because we're not trying to sell and we don't like the hard sell. But I'll follow up and just, hey, does it make sense for us to continue talking? Like, is there a fit? I just need to know so that I can plan accordingly or, like, stop communicating with you until it makes sense. But persistence, looking back, has played a huge role in all areas of my life, basically, pretty much. How do you tailor your travel plans to meet the unique needs of your millennial clients?
I love my millennial clients because, so I was born in 96, so I'm on the very, like, I'm on the cusp of Gen Z and millennial, but millennial is such an encompassing term. I mean, we've got folks who are my age, 28, all the way up to, I think, 44 now or something. But I love my millennial clients because they're across the board. So I've got my folks who are like me and my boyfriend, like, it's just the two of us and our pets. So that's our family. And then we've got other people who have built this nuclear family. They have their a married spouse and they have their two or three kids and their white picket fence or whatever. But getting to know my clients, are that's like the best part, aside from when they come back and they send me pictures and they're like, look at all of the things we did. But learning about what it is that they value in their travel or in their vacations in general, because a good vacation, you don't have to go far and wide to do it. You can basically do it in the backyard, especially in North Carolina, beach, mountains, and the triad. Like, there's so much to do. But learning about what it is that they're looking for. So I have had clients who come to me and they're like, we want this specifically, but can you sprinkle some stuff in there? And so we talk about that. And I've had other clients who come to me and they say, we have no idea what we want to do. But we do know we do not want to get on a plane and we don't want to leave the coast. Like, we want to make sure there's water near us. Here's our budget. So taking that and narrowing it down to, okay, let's go, you know, funnel method. Like, we're going to start at the very top and then we're going to say, okay, how about this, these geographic areas? Are you cool with that? You can drive to them or you can take a train, but you're not flying. Okay, cool. So then from there, then we get down to, okay, here's the top attractions in the area. But one of the things too, and that's kind of where the weekly vacation view came from, was telling folks, yes, travel is expensive, but there are ways to afford it. But there's also, you don't have to go to Disney World and spend $10,000. My average Walt Disney World sale is around $3,500. Typically, that's for two adults and maybe one child. Families, it's priced a little more because there's more bodies, obviously. But showing that travel is expensive, but there are more affordable options, and also letting people know you also don't have to go on a 7 or 10 night cruise. You can go on a 3 or 4 night out of Charleston or Norfolk, you know, once the 2025 rolls around. But really getting in and getting into the nitty gritty of what are you looking for? And then in my head saying, okay, how can I enhance this even more? Most of my client or all of my clients, I try to make sure I do something special for them whenever they're in destination. So that way they know, like, oh, hey, like, Cheyenne's thinking of us, she's here for us, you know, any of that. But even if it's something as small as getting, like, sparkling wine delivered to their stateroom, just to be like, hey, congratulations, you graduated. Woo! Yeah. But anything in that. But yeah, I love my millennial clients, man. Like, they are the best. And it's because there's so much fun for activities. There's so many options there. A lot of my senior clients are going to Alaska right now, which I love that too. But yeah, and my Gen Zers are kind of, they're, my brother is a Gen Zer, and so he calls me all the time. He's like, I need flights to so-and-so. And I'm like, why are you going to wherever? He called me like a month ago. I need flights to Jamaica. I'm like, what? Who are you going to Jamaica with? And it's because they're his friends, dad's, cousin's, uncle or something has some timeshare points that are expiring. But yeah, my millennial clients, I love them so much. They are also my number one return clients too. So usually they'll start like a mid-tier something, and then they, you know, kind of test the water and they're like, oh, this is great. So then we start working into more like elevated experiences.
Yeah, I am of the older millennial side. And my son, when he turned 18, part of the present, I call it a present, but one of the things I wanted to do with him was a DC trip that he had scheduled for school, but it got canceled because of COVID. So he was really looking forward to that trip, and he made it seem like he was really looking forward to going. So I tried to plan this trip, and I realized very quickly, like, I need to rely on a professional for this, because an example of that is like the first day or two, we Ubered from like our hotel to DC and walked around DC, but the Uber fees were just stacking up. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, again, small town girl from a small town world, I'm like, what is the transit? How does this work? $2 like a day, or it was so cheap. And then that got us to where we're going. But we found that out on like the third, fourth day. And that's an example of like somebody who does this professionally probably could have saved us a lot of money. You mentioned the budget, finding the budget. Do you ask that in the beginning?
Yes. And it's typically phrased somewhere along the line of, do you have a budget that I should be respectful of? Sometimes people will come back and they'll say, it's $5,000. Does that make sense? Or does $10,000 make sense? A lot of times they come back and say, I have no idea how much this costs. Can you give me a ballpark at like mid-tier range? And depending on what it is, that also varies, like what the vacation or what the destination is. That mid-tier can vary. But that's usually where we start. And then from there, we do the good, better, best. There are some places where there might be a more value hotel available, but I don't want to put my clients in there unless they specifically say, I want to stay here specifically. And then have a conversation about it. And I'm like, okay, well, the transportation options are much more limited there. The food options are more limited. Mm-hmm. It is going to be louder. There might be a conference going on specifically there. So again, educating them on where they're going. But that is definitely one of the first conversations that we have. Or sometimes like they'll come out the gate and they say, I know this is going to be expensive. Just let me know where we're at so that I can plan accordingly.
That's what I was getting at, is I wonder if you had any strategies to share to get the budget out of somebody who may be like, I don't have a budget, or I don't know what the budget is. Because, you know, generally what I find is most people do have a number in their head. They just don't want to show their cards. Yep. Because you may come in cheaper and they want to save money, or they don't want to seem cheap and give you a low number. And it's So do you have any strategies for that?
Really kind of figuring out what experience they're trying to have. So are you trying to have a, we're getting away for the weekend and we're not opposed to paying for our meals, or mid-tier and we're like, okay, well, we want to fly business class out of Wilmington. I do not want to drive to Myrtle Beach or Raleigh to fly there. So business class out of Wilmington, okay, automatically we're flying Delta or American. Okay, that's going to be a little more expensive than flying like Avelo or any of the other budget airlines. Do you want like, or still mid-tier we're looking at, okay, are you don't mind paying for transfers, but you do kind of want to stay like all-inclusive-esque. Like most everything is included, food's included, but maybe you have to pay for drink, alcoholic beverages. Or are we looking at that higher tier where I want to go and have a butler and somebody wait on me hand and foot? I don't want to open my phone except for to scan my transfer like pull up my transfer QR code. And when I get off the plane, I want somebody there holding an iPad with my name on it.
That sounds really cool.
Doesn't it?
Sounds exciting. Yeah, I want that one.
Yeah. And then kind of, you know, we, because you have to, you have to qualify the expectations and then meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my folks are typically at that mid-tier level because they either are travelers and they know what they want, but they're trying to still be very cautious of how they're spending, or they're new to traveling and they want to have a really, really good experience, but still have that room for, like, I'm not quite ready for a super luxury experience, but I also want to make sure that you book somewhere that has a spa. Me. I love getting massages on vacation now. I can't afford the most luxurious accommodations. I'm a mid-tier person myself, but where I go will have a spa so I can get a massage.
Yeah.
So figuring out what those little quirks that my clients have as well helps to qualify, okay, are we more like good range, better range, or best range? Like, where are we at there? And sometimes I don't get a number. I just get, these are the experiences that I want. And then based off of where the destination is, I can say, okay, so we're looking at this all-inclusive versus this one, or we're looking at Jamaica versus Aruba.
Mm-hmm.
Because those islands, because the transportation to get there itself is double the cost. But, you know, looking at those different things and giving them that education when we get to the proposal point, this is why I gave you these options. Here is my recommendation. And then if they come back and they're like, oh, this is exactly what we were looking for, the price point is good, great, let's move forward. Or if they're like, that's a little bit more than we're looking for, do you have something that's similar but a little cheaper, or a little more affordable? And if so, what would we possibly lose in that kind of trade-off?
Yeah.
So there are sometimes I just don't get the number until we get to the deposit portion.
Does that convert well for you?
It does, as long as my clients are wanting to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I'll have folks who find me online or they'll send in an inquiry from like Travel Leaders or from my website. They're like, I Googled and you came up. I want to go here at this time, make it under this price. And I just can't. Yeah. Like, there, because that comes down to supply and demand. A December cruise is cheaper than a June cruise, or things like that. And then kind of re-qualifying and re-exploring expectations on what we're looking for. And sometimes it's just, I can't make that happen for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do have some suppliers that do price matching, which is really nice. So if somebody does come to me and they're like, well, I found this Hilton Hawaiian Village price on X, Y, and Z website, and you're giving me something that's $200 more. And I'd be like, you know what? Let me take that real quick. Give me a day or two, and let me come back to you and see if I can find something that is equitable and matches that. So, yeah, there's definitely, that is where most of the conversation takes place. And that is why sometimes the inquiry and proposal timeline is so much longer than just like, Cheyenne, I want to go to this place, give me a number, let's book it and go. That's not always the case. Sometimes it can take up to like a month, only because we're getting, like, we're trying to figure out and suss out what it is exactly that the clients are looking for. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we start looking at different options and they're like, oh, well, this option has what we want, but this option has a better price. And then we keep looking, then we find something that has both.
Perfect. So what are some new marketing techniques or strategies you're excited to try in the remainder of the year?
I'm trying to post more consistently and really tap into my scheduling tools. We, at my day job, we use Buffer. I've also used Planoly. I've used Meta scheduling tool, which is garbage. And trying to figure out which one works best for me. And honestly, because I use Buffer at my day job, that's kind of where we're leaning to. I've used Hootsuite before, and there's too many bells and whistles there for what I need to do the quick and dirty scheduling. But it's not a new and sparkly marketing technique, but I mean, that is honestly what I've got to get better at doing, is posting more frequently, because I can post 3 reels a day for a week, and then I'm like, oh, that was so much work.
Yeah.
It'll be fine for the next week, and then I get stuck. I'm like, okay, Cheyenne, like, so like the vacation view, it's weekly. It goes out once a week. And at first I was like, oh, like, let's do it on Monday. Start the week off right. A lot of my suppliers release promotions on Wednesdays, so it makes more sense to do it later on in the week. So that is really a big thing, is just posting more consistently. I want to look more into Pinterest and see what I can find, see if I find any success there with that. But really taking more advantage of my Facebook following, but also still trying to grow views on Instagram. Whether the followers come in, like, I want them to come in, but sometimes the views are really what sends people, because there's a lot of times where I'll see a reel or something and I just forget to follow the person, but I do, they get my clicks. I go to their link tree, I go to their website, and I put something in, I download whatever thing they're offering. Yeah. And then I just forget to follow them, and I'm like, oh, well, they got my business, I guess. And if I remember, I'll go back and follow them. But really just trying to focus on the consistent posting and more growth on those, which, again, not shiny or new, but
yeah. Pinterest, I think, would do really well for you, being with the travel industry. I know very little about it, but enough to know that it usually does well with visual-driven industries, and pins are also indexable by search engines. So if you have a website, then basically, like, if you put up a pin that's like best travel destinations of winter 2024, somebody searching for that could see that on Google search results, click through that pin or that board or however that whole thing works, but those link back to your website. So it just kind of passes that SEO.
Oh, okay.
So it's also, I didn't either until like 6 months ago. And it was like, I didn't realize that pins or boards, one or the other, or maybe it's both, are indexable. And it technically counts as a backlink back to your website. So
I love that. I'm going to have to, especially because Pinterest is the media without the social. Mm-hmm. And so, I love social media, but I also hate social media because sometimes it's too much.
Yeah.
So that's another reason why I'm trying to get in there, especially because like my millennials and my seniors they're really where a lot of my client base comes from. Mm-hmm. And guess where a lot of millennials are hanging out? Yeah. Pinterest. It's quieter. I get it.
Yeah. Pinterest, Facebook. I'm more Facebook, if anything, although it's another story. I dislike Facebook. But out of the social media, like, I'm more Facebook. My wife, however, same age, she's more Instagram and TikTok. You know, she has Facebook, but definitely the Pinterest. She's more of a Pinterest user than I am. So it makes sense. And she'll send me pins and stuff. And I'm like, I have no idea how to work Pinterest. I try, and, you know, I've got a little bored. So how do you stay updated with the latest trends and changes in the travel industry?
I am a member of ASTA, which is the American Society of Travel Advisors. So they send us out a daily newsletter or communication email. So that's, if there's any like big legislation or any new bills, or even at the state level, because it's technically worldwide, but it's the American Society. There's like tiers to it. Anyway. Nationwide options or state level legislation that's going through or big changes, they send that through. So I rely on them a lot for big, like, overarching information. And then my consortia, my host, which is WorldVIA, they also send out daily communication, and that's much more tiered to our like preferred suppliers. Mm-hmm. And so I take what I need from that. So I have 14 preferred suppliers that I work with. There are hundreds out there. So I just kind of take what I need from my people. And then from my preferred suppliers, I get constant emails from them too. I actually just subscribed to a newsletter or a physical magazine, because I'm tired of scrolling. But a physical magazine from Travel Weekly as well, or Travel Weekly, I think, is a part of it. It's a monthly magazine, but weekly newsletter. So I'm super excited about that too, because it's just getting out there and seeing what other people are doing. I don't specialize in Mexico. I don't know if I ever will, but there's a lot happening in Mexico right now. So being able to see that and see if I can take any of that for my Caribbean destinations or my Caribbean clients, is one of the cool things. And then of course, you know, keeping up on social media with all of them, but I'm really digging more into what our nationwide supply supporters are sending out and creating for us for the travel world.
Okay. How do you balance your day job right now with running Travel with Shy?
So my day job is typically 8 to 5-ish. But up to you, we've finally tapered off. But a handful of times a month, I'm staying until like 10 p.m. So I'll be working more like 11 to 10, couple days a month for board meetings and things like that. So it's really, I do a lot on my lunch breaks. My parents live down the road from my office for my day job. So I go and visit them and work during lunch and then in the evenings. And then a lot Saturdays are when I do a lot. I do a lot of admin stuff. I make sure that I'm caught up on all of my emails. I hate notifications. So I have like 8 emails that are unread right now that it's just, I'm working on them, but I can't unclick the email until it's completely done. It's like my unofficial to-do list.
Same.
And getting through all of those, but the balance, it's still something that I'm working on. There's no set schedule aside from my day job. There's no set schedule for this. So my day job is minimum 40 hours a week. Sometimes we're pushing, 45. This can take up to 40 hours a week. And I don't really know how we fit it in there, but we do. But it's also a lot. It's not just me sitting at a desk and tapping away. It's text messages or it's phone calls or it's creating content whenever I'm in the drive-through or whatever. But yeah, there's not too much of a like strict balance, but I'm trying to get back to one where Sundays, ideally, there is no work happening. Yeah. Because that is my reset day. It's when I go and we clean the house and we go grocery shopping and take my dog to the park and like all of those things, but really kind of moving to more of a 5 to 6 day work week in general.
I use my inbox as my to-do list. So please let me share some of the things that have helped me. One, Grammarly for Business has a snippets tool where you can save like your most used email replies as snippets. So it can be like sentences, blocks, like paragraphs or whole emails, right? That's been huge for me, a game changer. They also have the Grammarly AI. So it has a button when you go to reply an email to reply quickly. And so you can feed it some context or it can read the email thread and give you its best. Like that has saved me a lot of time as well. Nice. And then I'm a Gmail user, but there's a Boomerang for Gmail. There are a lot of different extensions that will do this, but Boomerang is cool because I can set it to come back to my inbox if I don't receive a reply after a period of time. Okay. So like if I do have to follow up, and because I use my inbox as my to-do list, it comes back and I remember I have to follow up with this person.
I like that. Yeah, I used Grammarly in college and undergrad and grad school, and then I kind of forgot about it. So
they've upped the game since then. Yeah,
I love that.
Mm. So what keeps you motivated and passionate about travel planning despite some of the challenges you faced?
When my clients come back and they're like, "That was fantastic," or "We didn't think that we'd be able to do that." I swell. Like, it makes my heart swell. Like, the Grinch and his heart swells 3. But so many of my clients across the board are like, I haven't traveled since I was a kid. I didn't think I'd be able to do it now. I can't buy a house. What makes me think I can travel? Or, I had too much avocado toast this week. Like, I can't go and travel. But when they come back and say, "You made this so easy. We had a great time. We didn't have to worry about anything. We didn't think this was going to happen." But that's it right there. Like just making, and I don't say it just because I'm a Disney adult and all of that, like making people's travel dreams a reality, like that brings me so much joy. That fills my cup all the way up and overflowing.
Yeah.
Because of how much I love to travel and what I experience doing it, I want other people to be able to experience that too. And especially folks who are like, "I don't know if we can." Oh, no, you can. We'll make it happen. It might not be in 2024. Heck, it might not be in 2025. But when 2026 rolls around and you get to have the trip of your dream, the trip of your lifetime up to this point, it'll be so worth it.
Yeah.
So just again, making those travel dreams a reality, not just a cheesy tagline. Like, literally, that is it.
I can tell you're really passionate about it when you speak of it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, that's Simon Sinek, I think. He has a book, It Start With Why. There's also a TED Talk, but, you know, it draws me, it draws listeners in when you talk about it, because you can just kind of feel the passion about it. What's the switch? So what is going to be the switch for you to determine, okay, it's time for you to leave your day job and start focusing on your business full time? Like, what?
If I can get to the point where I am making, at a minimum, where I am consistently for 3 years, so this is long game planning, but if I can get to the point where for 3 years I make my salary at my day job, it can be to the cent, but if I can do that consistently for 3 years, and I'll probably add in like a little bit of wiggle room, you know, but if I can do that consistently for 3 years, I'll pack it up.
Okay.
And say, you know, that this is it. Like, I own a travel agency and that is what I do. Travel is my thing. In a perfect world, it won't take 3 years. Not, you know, it, but, and I'm not saying that it won't happen. I would love for it to, and be able to do this full time. But that is the long-term, long-range vision, is if I can make my salary for 3 years, then travel is shine is full time.
Perfect. Yeah, sometimes you just need a spark to be the catalyst to the flame.
Oh, so, yeah.
That's all the questions I have for you today. I want you to tell everybody where they can check you out online if they're interested in learning more about you.
Absolutely. So my website is travelwithshy.com. So that's travelwithshy.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at travel.with.shy. Again, C-H-Y. Those are the three best places to find me. My website has all of the links that you need, as well as the link tree on my Facebook and Instagram. But you can also email me hello@travelwithshy.com, and we can also start the process there.
Perfect. I have one more thing for you. So as part of this episode, I've been trying to launch a segment I call Pay It Forward. So really, I'd like to give you the opportunity to shout out another entrepreneur or business owner that has inspired you or that you are inspired by, and why you're inspired by them.
Oh my gosh, there's so many. All right. Well, so I live in Southport, and one of my favorite places to visit is the Throwbacks Axe House and Board Game House on Howe Street. They have been in business, I think, for two or three years. I think they're going on their third year. But I love going there to just hang out. You know, you can throw axes a bunch, and that's really cool. I use it to get a lot of frustration out, if I'm being so real with you. But also, Britton and Kevin are some of the nicest people that you'll ever meet. And they really love what they do. They have different axe throwing leagues. They have pinball leagues. I didn't know that was a thing. So that's new this year. But when you said that, they are who popped into my head. So I met them through the Southport Oak Island Chamber of Commerce, and we see each other at different events and everything now. And I occasionally go by and just say, hey, grab a drink. They have a shop dog, also very fun. But if you're looking for anything to do in Southport Oak Island area, that should be at the top of your list for sure. Especially on a rainy day, you know, or a crowded beach day, or it's too daggone hot like it is right now. They have air conditioning and water and good drinks. So
those are requirements here.
Yeah.
Where we're at.
Absolutely.
Shy, thank you so much for joining me. For everybody watching, please do check out Travel with Shy, and see you next time.
Thanks so much, Derek. Bye,
thank
y'all.
Thank you. Hey, make sure you subscribe for more insights, and if you like this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Join our free community at entrepreneurbootcamppodcast.com, and let's start building a great business together.